Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Boxing Podcast. We are sponsored by 32 Red. I'm your host, Dev Sarni, and with me is a man who spent the best part of last week running around Spain in his shorts and drawing oohs and ahs from the thousands of onlookers. It's the Marathon Man. It's Steve Lillis.
Oh, Marathon Man, it's back. What an intro again, yeah. Dev. You keep bettering yourself every week, and it was great running around Spain, but you're never far away from boxing out there. I ran the Murcia half marathon with Sanjeev Sahota, one of Frank Warren's boxers.
Yeah, unbeaten super lightweight, 10-0, I believe.
He is, yeah. I think he's looking to get out. I think he'll be coming back here soon for some training up there. So he'll be out April, May time.
So how did you get on in the actual marathon? Like with them pins out, did you catch the eyes of any senoritas?
I didn't catch the eyes of any senoritas, but I was under 2 hours, and I think I was fifth in my age group, which is a bit of kudos for me. So I'm happy. I was happy with it.
It's very impressive, and that's well done. Good company to be in. Well, before we get going, Steve, did you catch Keith Thurman last week?
I saw it when I got back, and I can see why there's people digging him out, saying why it's over for him. He's on the slide. We've seen the best of him. Hey, they may be right, but you've got to remember, this has been his first fight for a long, long time, and The opponent wasn't the worst. So I think we've got to, you know, cut him some slack, but toss that coin in the air, come on the other side, Dev. I can see why people are saying make him and Pacquiao now, because that would be a great fight. Hey, Errol Spence, go and get him after Garcia. But let's just see what he does next time out. But he's got to be busy. He can't go vanishing for a year, spending that money he would have got for last weekend.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I put out a tweet saying maybe one-time Thurman has become once-upon-a-time Thurman, and his best days are behind him. But I don't know. To be honest, I just wanted to use that joke rather than actually, you know, really go into his performance. I thought he was all right. He looked hurt at times, but he did drop the guy. And Josecito Lopez, he's not rubbish, is he? He's a name opponent who's very tough and will keep coming forward.
That's right. You know, he's one of the, whether you can call him a gatekeeper, Lopez, or I'm not sure, but he's a high-end gatekeeper, fringe world level against the best. He's a good fight. Let's see what Keith Thurman does next time. And by the way, him and Pacquiao, that would be a fight.
Ooh, yes, that would be a fight. And do you know what? Right now, you'd favour Manny Pacquiao in that after these performances. And to think that Keith Thurman is 29 years old, Manny Pacquiao is 40, and even this version of Manny Pacquiao, I think, would be favourite against Keith Thurman. That's just credit to the man from the Philippines. Wow.
Yeah, look, as you say, he's 40 years of age, Manny, and you know he isn't young. He's nearly 70 fights now. But if you look at he's run a fight, you know, since Mayweather. He beat Timothy Bradley, Jesse Vargas, the controversial loss to Jeff Horn. He ripped a heart from Lucas Matisse, who wanted no more after he was down 3 or 4 times. And then he's beaten Broner. Has there been a welterweight in the last 5 fights on such a run like that? So, yeah, he would be favourite, and I can see why.
Very well put, Steve. And also, the man who really stole the headlines from that, the man who went viral, it wasn't Keith Thurman. It wasn't Josecito Lopez. It was, of course, Steve Willis, the man who ducked the Box Nation podcast despite several attempts, again stole the headlines with some fantastic funny faces. He's the Phil Jones of boxing.
If Phil Jones is listening, he'll be after you. But it again. Steve Willis, you know what? He's got these great character images. You don't know whether he's happy, sad, angry, about to jump through a roof with joy. You just don't know. But I want to say he's a great referee, and not because he's only one letter out from having an identical name to me.
That's just a happy coincidence. Well, it's another cracker this week. We hear from national treasure Nicola Adams as she announced her world title fight for the 8th of March. We've got a bit of Anthony Yard. We've got a bit of Sam Bowen. We've got Ahara Davis. He answers back Sam Maxwell. He tells him how exactly Sam Maxwell can get that fight. And we look ahead to this weekend's light heavyweight showdown between Eleida Alvarez and Sergey Kovalev. Lend us your ears for the next hour or so, because it's time for the Boxing Podcast. In 2012, she struck gold. She became the first woman to win an Olympic boxing title. In 2016, she doubled up. She did it again. Of course, I am talking about Nicola Adams. On March the 8th, in her sixth professional fight, she'll be aiming to become a world champion. Adams takes on the WBO world flyweight champion Areli Mocino from Mexico at London's iconic Royal Albert Hall. It also happens to be International Women's Day. How about that? Here's Nicola Adams with her promoter, Frank Warren.
Nicola, first to you. When you turned professional under Mr. Warren here, did you imagine fighting for a world title in your sixth fight?
Well, I actually wanted to fight for a world title in my first fight, but I was encouraged to, you know, take my time, build a name for myself, and then the world title will come in time. So now it's here, and I can't wait. I'm excited. Royal Albert Hall. Muhammad Ali's boxed here, he's my hero, so it's very inspiring for me because I'll be able to box in the same venue that he has as well and hopefully become a world champion.
You wanted it after five fights, so Mr. Warren's let you down, you're saying, basically.
Nah, he's doing a good job.
So, Frank, I mean, Nicola dabbles in the extraordinary, as we know from across the world. Her amateur career, double Olympic gold medalist, won just about everything there's to be won. I mean, five fights against an experienced opponent in Areli Mocino. I mean, she's a three-time world champion, so Nicola's not going to have it easy on the night.
This is our female Lomachenko. She's going to go and do it. She's going to create history. She is history. Double gold medalist in the Olympic Games. She's history. International Women's Day, as I was informed. So we've got International Women's Day. What a thing that'll be, won't it, eh? For her to go and do that and cement her legacy in British boxing. It just doesn't get any better than that.
That's what we see from these standout amateurs, the ones with the real pedigree, is they don't need warming up into it, do they? They can almost go straight in at world level.
Yeah, up to a point you can do that, but I mean, you know, if we didn't think she could win that fight, we wouldn't be making the match, that's for sure. And if we didn't have the confidence in what Nicola's done, then absolutely wouldn't even be contemplated. But I have every bit of confidence. And the reason I've got the confidence is that old thing I always say, because she gives me confidence. I know what she's capable of doing. And it's going to be tough. It won't be easy. But you know what? She's got it in her home country. She's got it in an iconic venue. It's going to just be an amazing night. And I'm fingers crossed, got everything crossed. I'll probably look like Ben Turpin on the night that she comes through this. But I think she will do with the prize.
Nicola, even though you said you might have wanted it a little bit earlier, that interim world title fight up in Leicester must have done you the world of good. Going 10 rounds for the first time with a tough opponent, you're only going to benefit from that, surely?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was the first time I'd ever been 10 rounds. It was good experience. It was good to know that I could do the 10 rounds. Even though you do the 10 rounds in the gym all the time, it's a lot different when you're under the lights. You know, you've got the crowd around you, and you're doing the 10 rounds that way. It's totally different. And now I know I've got that in the bag. You know, if I finish the fight early, cool. If it goes all the way, it's all good. Win's a win.
I mean, Isabel Milan, I mean, she did make it a bit ragged at times, didn't she? I mean, those are the sort of things you're probably going to have to get used to.
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot different from the amateur game, but I'm learning all the time. We've got good fighters up in the Dominic Ingles gym, and I'm just learning from everybody. I get experience, and you know, I do a couple of rounds with Billy, body sparring. You know, it's all good. You learn and you pick up little things along the way. You know, and they've got vast amounts of experience, so I'm never lost for, you know, to ask someone a question if I'm not sure about something. So it's good.
You mentioned joining up with Dom, obviously at Winco Bank in Sheffield. Is this an important factor for you? Because whereas before you were kind of tucked away in America from after you turned pro, will it help now the fact you'll be a more visible presence leading into your world title fight? Maybe promotionally at least.
Yeah, definitely. The public will be seeing a lot more of me now. It's nice to be back on home soil, and it's nice having that family unit and friends around that, you know, have known me for years and to be able to give me that support.
I mean, it was probably a good experience training over in America with Virgil Hunter, first of all. But being a national treasure with the Olympics and everything else, it's probably right, but you're based back here training.
Yeah, definitely, especially for this fight as well. I don't think I've boxed in London since I won my Olympic gold medal. So to be able to think that I'm back in London again now, winning a world title, is going to be unreal.
Unification's after, I presume, is it?
Yeah, definitely.
Frank, the rest of the card, I mean, it's a return to the Albert Hall. I mean, it's a stunning venue. It's where people of my age remember going to watch boxing as a kid, and it really is something very special. But you've put on a card which is fan-friendly, to say the least.
It is. They're all very well-supported guys, so we're going to get some good atmosphere there, here on the night. It'll tick all the boxes. It's a Friday night, so I think that's going to add to it as well. So with this great fight that we put together for Nicola, but Daniel Dubois, this is a good test for him. Very good test for him. See where he's at the stage of his career. And then the rest of the undercard have got some fantastic fights on there. Johnny Garton. I'm sure he's going to again show everybody what he's got there. We've got Liam Williams on there. We've got Joe Mullendo. I mean, it's a really, really good show. Good show, and Archie and so forth. It's really good.
Archie Sharp and Lucas Ballingall. I mean, it's another battle of the unbeatens. I mean, it's what people, what the public like, isn't it?
Yeah, we put two undefeated fighters together, and I think that's going to be a bit of a special fight. That may be the fight of the night. Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, you've got Liam Williams against Joe Mullendo, and to use your own words, fight written all over it, maybe?
Well, he does. Look, he said himself, his wife's got a better jab than him. That tells you how he comes to fight. He's going to come and he's going to stand, he's just going to try and drag Liam into a tear-up. That's what he will do. So, if he does do that, we will have something a little bit special.
That was Richard Hubbard there with the interview. Steve, this is a big opportunity for Nicola Adams. Fantastic stage, fantastic occasion. Talk to me.
There's no better stage than the Royal Albert Hall for boxing. As a kid, I'm a lot older than you, Dev. I grew up going to Wednesday night fights there. And secondly, for Nicola Adams, there is no better fight for her because this is a genuine world title fight. Forget all the people. Look at these records and think, all these girls that have won gold medals have done, they can wipe away all these current pros. The champion, Aureli Muchino, is a serious, serious test for Nicola Adams. Look, she's had 32 fights. In half of those fights, she's been the 10-round distance. If you had a male boxer at this stage of his career, gold medalist or not, going in against someone with such experience who's been that championship round so many times, you'd be really worried for that person going in at 5-0. Nicola's been that distance once against Isabel Milan. She's up against a really solid, battle-hardened champion who's still only 29, and Muchino has been the 10-round distance 16 times. Goodness Nicola's me. Only had 5 fights. This is a tough fight, and it's a good fight. And the people who might snigger, thinking, oh, it's just all they're doing, Frank Warren and BT, is making sure they get Nicola Adams a title. Tell you what, go and have a look at Aureli Muchino's record. She's a good champion.
Well, there you go. I couldn't have put it better myself, Steve Lillis. And how iconic would it be if she did it? Nicola Adams wins the world title on International Women's Day. What a message. What a message that sends out worldwide. Steve, talk to me about the rest of the card. There's Daniel Dubois on there against Razvan Kajanu, Liam Williams against Mullendo. What tickles your fancy?
Two fantastic fights you've mentioned there, Dev, that are going to delight the packed crowd at the Albert Hall, and particularly Daniel against Razvan Kajanu. There's a lot of rivalry and it's building nicely between Nathan Gorman and Daniel Dubois. They're certain to meet, I should think, within 2 years, shall we say, if they both remain unbeaten. And it'll be whether, people will be asking, can he do a better job on Kajanu than Nathan Gorman did, who had a virtual shutout. Kajanu's a decent operator. You can say he's a sparring partner, call him what you want. But the way he fiddled his way through that fight against Nathan Gorman, he might be able to do the same against Daniel Dubois and cause Daniel problems. I thought Gorman was better that night than he gave himself. And Liam Williams, Joe Mullendo, they're just going to meet in the middle of the ring. Look, Liam's fought as a much higher level. So he's going to be an overwhelming favourite for that fight, Dev. But, Mullendo's one of those guys. You look at his record and it's 11-2, but he puts everything into a fight. You can forget his two fights with Lee Markham. He'll dig as deep as he has to go that night. And Williams might be the man who leaves the ring with his hands raised, but he'll know he's been in a fight.
Oh, absolutely. Very well put. And those fights with Lee Markham, one word to describe them is just violent. Absolutely violent. And speaking of Joe Mullendo, I have to play this line from the press conference last week because he really stole the show. The guy was absolutely hilarious. Cue Joe Mullendo.
I couldn't out-jab me mum. so I've got to have a fight. Liam wants to move on to world class. He is a world class fighter in my view. I've got to have a fight with him. I've got to draw him in. No one gives me a prayer anyway. I've got nothing to lose. Listen, I'm going to hunt him down. We're going to have a fight. Or he's going to run and I'm going to still try and chase him and have a fight. He either irons me out or we have a good fight. That's how it goes. He's leagues above me. Do you know what I mean? I wear Slazenger socks and drive a Fiesta. He's a superstar. We're going to have a fight and that's it.
So, yeah, that have everyone in stitches. Joe Mullender is a funny man and a tough man. I'm looking forward to seeing how he gets on against Liam Williams. Steve, just a note back on Daniel Dubois. How incredible would it be if he turns the Royal Albert Hall into his kind of lion's den? He has kind of 3, 4, 5 fights there, packs it out, and it becomes his home.
It would be fantastic, wouldn't it? You know, the boxing's going back to a great arena that's 150 years old in 2021. It's been steeped in boxing history. And, you know, you go back to, you know, Bruno was a bit of a house fighter there. You know, you can go back to the 30s, Primo Carnera box there. You know, it would be great if Dubois could become the house fighter there, gradually sell it out, and then develop to the bigger London venues, you know, like the Wembley Arena, that sort of thing. As you know, back in bygone years when you had the national promotion shows, fighters would top the bill at the Albert Hall, and as they become bigger, they'd gradually move on to Wembley Arena and bigger arenas, and Frank Bruno moved on to Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, well, there you go. I'm looking at Frank Warren here. He needs to make this happen. This needs to be his lion's den. It's such a great venue. Dubois put out that video on his social media earlier on in the week, and it just looked fantastic. It was him just kind of looking around the arena, and, you know, it's steeped in history. Muhammad Ali's fought there. Imagine that.
I think Ali had a couple exhibitions there in 71, 79 on his farewell to London. You know what? It's just a place that fits so well with boxing. It's in central London. You can get, you know, it's near tube stations. You can go out afterwards in London. It's all, you know, as I say, I grew up with it and I just can't wait for that evening. And I remember went back there a few years ago when the Box Nation cameras were there for Billy Joe Saunders, Tony Hill. And it was one of the special Saturday nights we had on Box Nation.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, this is Friday night. It's Friday the 8th of March at the Royal Albert Hall in London. It's live on BT Sport. If you're not going, watch it on telly. If you're not watching it on telly, just make sure you're going. On February 23rd, 17-0 light heavyweight sensation Anthony Yard returns to action. He takes on former European champion Mehdi Ammar at the Leicester Arena live on BT Sport. Steve Lillis caught up with the Beast at a press conference for the upcoming show.
Anthony, your next fight against Mehdi Ammar. Yes. That's a good step up, isn't it?
Well, yeah, so they're saying. on paper, yes, yeah, definitely a step up.
What do you make of the people who are still criticising you for choice of opponent? I've got to ask you, because it's non-stop.
Well, other people notice it more than me. Literally, I just don't pay them any mind. It's boxing. If you look at the history of boxing, it's always been like that. You know, when people are coming up, if they're looking good coming up, 9 times out of 10 people say, oh, he's fighting nobodies, or he's too good for that opponent, or they say something negative. And then when they become world champion, or they start doing well, they say, oh, he's not fighting the people he should be fighting. It's all opinionated. Boxing's a very opinionated sport.
You're exciting to watch, aren't you? Because you're knocking people out.
that's the aim of the game for me, to be exciting. It's an entertaining sport. If you're not entertaining, sometimes you fade out into the background. You need to be entertaining in some way. If you look at Floyd Mayweather, for example, there was a period of time where his boxing skills were so good, it ended up looking boring to the average eye. Boxing specialists, yeah, they appreciated it, but to the average casual boxing fan who want to see a tear up, he appeared to be boring. So he had to be entertaining in another way. If you looked at how he changed the persona, he had to be entertaining in another way. So it's an entertaining sport. So you've got to find a way to entertain the fans and supporters.
Who do you sort of look at as the great entertainer? Someone like Mike Tyson?
Most definitely. Mike Tyson had a persona that everyone gelled to. You know, at the time when it was happening in the flesh, my mum told me that a lot of people didn't like him. You know, he uses too much profanity. You know, he's a bad guy, he's negative, etc. But then some people loved him. But then now, everyone loves Mike Tyson. You know, every person under the sun loves Mike Tyson. So I feel like it's just over time, people change their opinions or their perception of people. Same thing with Muhammad Ali. When he was active, a lot of people hated him. And then when he retired, oh yeah, he's the greatest. He's the best ever. So again, it's just boxing.
Do you think that could be the case of Anthony Yard? Some people would dig you out throughout your career, and then when you're gone, he was a great fighter. Leonard's got the same treatment.
You know what? It's not even only going to be when I'm gone. It's when you end up in the fights that they're happy with. It just happens with boxing. Even with someone like Floyd Mayweather, even when he was doing all the braggadocious talking and people didn't like him, when he fought people like Cotto, if you listen to the commentators in that fight, they're saying, you know, what he's doing is amazing. To fight someone like Cotto like that is amazing. What he done to Marquez, another legendary fighter, amazing. You have to give respect where it's due. And that will come over time.
There's a big fight next week, WBO light heavyweight title rematch, Eleider Alves against Sergey Kovalev. You know, you're a number one contender. You could face the winner later this year. Who do you think wins that fight next week?
To be honest, I don't know. I feel like the last fight, Kovalev was winning on points. I was there with Tunde. He was winning, but then again, it's just the beast of the sport. One shot, he got caught and got stopped. Within this fight, if he can go out there and continue to do what he was doing before he got knocked out, again, he wins the fight. But again, it's that thing of it was a bad knockout. So can that have a big effect on how he comes into the next fight? You saw the same thing happen when he fought Andre Ward. The first fight he lost some points, second fight he got stopped. So it just depends how he bounces back, really.
Do you feel you'll be ready for the winner yet?
I feel like I'm, again, I said this from the end of 2018, I feel like I'm ready. Whoever's put in front of me, I'm going to go in there and do my job.
And do you still love boxing as much as you did when you first started, when you left football?
I love it more, I'll be honest with you, because boxing has been good to me. So I've fallen in love with the sport even more. I still watch boxing a lot. Again, for example, Adrian Broner versus Pacquiao. If I didn't love boxing, I wouldn't have been so excited about that fight. The build-up was fantastic. A lot of people, you know, ridicule Adrian Broner for his antics, but at the same time, that's what gets everyone interested. You know, Adrian Broner is a very, very funny character. And I enjoy watching it, so I hope he can come back and get some wins under his belt. But it was a big ask against Pacquiao. You know, a lot of people are giving him stick, but Pacquiao is a world-class, legendary fighter, and he's still active and still doing well.
And when you follow the build-up and everything, did you think, I can't wait to get to Las Vegas eventually and have a fight week like that where it's crazy?
Most definitely. That's what, again, anyone that wants to be a star in a sport or become a future pay-per-view fighter, pay-per-view star, they always look at these moments and say, I can't wait to get there. You know, when I get there, I'm just going to soak it in and enjoy it. And sometimes it just comes randomly. You know, you've seen it happen time and time over again. Look at Tyson Fury. Before he fought Klitschko, he didn't have such a big name, and because of what he'd done to Klitschko, superstar overnight.
Anthony Yard, pay-per-view star, does that have a ring to it?
Most definitely. I feel like my name's even made for it. You know, a lot of people say to me, is that your real last name? I'm like, yeah. My last name is actually Yard. I just got to be there. I don't feel like it matters what your name is. I just feel like it matters what you do, how entertaining you are, and what you make of yourself. So, it's coming.
Well, Steve, I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. Anthony Yard is being unfairly criticised for his opponents. Mediamar just took Gvozdik the distance. Talk to me.
Nothing wrong with a fight at all, but you know what now? Anthony Yard, Frank Warren, and Tunde Ajayi's manager, trainer, that I think they're just turning the other cheek now and just, you know, almost, they should just adopt a siege mentality. Say what you want, because he's not going to win until he wins a world title and most probably defended it a few times. Just let people say what they want, because he cannot win. There is nothing wrong with this opponent at all. You know, I think he's 43 fights, is it, Dev? I think he's lost a handful of them. He's been the distance with the man who, you know, beat Adonis Stevenson, although not in the nicest circumstances at the end of the fight, what happened. This is a good opponent. And you know what also? Mediamar's had notice for the fight, everything. It's not like Mediamar's coming in at a week's notice. Oh, I could do with the money. I'll go and take the job. He's had good notice for this fight. Lay off Anthony Yard. And I'm not going to speak any more about these people who have a go at Yard on the podcast, because I'm going to join that siege mentality that the team around him should adopt, because it's ridiculous.
I get you. I get you. And I just want to point something out. I put this on Twitter the other day as well. I started a bit of a thread because I could see it. Yeah, Anthony Yard gets a lot of stick on Twitter. But it's a case of, look, if he beats Mehdi Ammar, he's beaten a former European champion. And that is the best win out of all UK light heavyweights. So look at, say, Callum Johnson's best win, Frank Buglioni, former British champion. Jose Burton's best win, Miles Shinquin, former English champion. Joshua Buatsi's best win, although he's early in his career and his wins are going to get better and better, at the moment it is Ronald Quinlan at a week's notice. And yeah. Someone said the other day, look, he should be fighting Anthony Sims Jr. I'm like, this guy's just beaten four opponents with a winning record. That's all Anthony Sims Jr. has beaten. It's very odd.
You know what? And, you know, calling for, you know, Yard and Buatsi, the fire happened when the time was right. I'm not here saying, you know, nor are you, that Yard's going to do this to him or Buatsi's going to do that. Let's just see how their career paths go over the next 18 months before. If they're both still unbeaten in 18 months, they're fighting. Don't worry about that. Rival camps or not, you find a way for that sort of fight to happen, be it through camps getting together or, you know, a purse bid situation. They will meet because the time will be right and the money will be right. We're not here saying who's going to win the fight. What we're saying, you know, what the point you're making, Dev, I think, and quite correctly, is if Yard comes through against Ammar, that is the best win of any of the current British light heavyweights. You know, I agree wholeheartedly with you.
Yeah, well, tell you what's good is now Anthony Yard is talking about the winner of Alvarez Kovalev. You know, we haven't heard that for, you know, well, I don't think we've heard that before. Now it's all been about, you know, it will come at the right time. Now he's actually got their names in his mouth. I like hearing that, and this is what people are going to want to hear. They want to hear that he's going to be watching this weekend. They want to hear that he's got an eye on it and he's feeling like he's ready. This is getting closer to where Anthony Yard needs to be.
You know, the fact he's fighting Ammar shows he's getting closer to where he needs to be. He has another two wins, say, before the end of the summer. I don't know what Frank, Tunde and Anthony's plans are, how busy they're going to be this year. You know, he's been very busy, but as you move up in class, you're not as busy. You fight three, maybe four times a year. So he may have no more than four fights maximum this year. But if he goes and has two good wins over against people of the Ammar elk, maybe a little bit better over the next 9-10 months. By the end of the year, he certainly is in the position and should be looking at challenging for a world title then, certainly in 12 months' time, for sure. And I'm sure Anthony Yard will be tuned into Box Nation tomorrow night, watching Sergei Kovalev attempt to regain the WBO light heavyweight title and get revenge over Elidar Alvarez. It's a great fight, especially after their first meeting last August, when Alvarez was behind on points and Kovalev suddenly fell apart, got hit by great power shots in the seventh round. Call it what you want. Really interesting fight tomorrow night. And I'm still favouring Alvarez to do it again, because also in that fight, he didn't just knock Kovalev out. Yeah, Kovalev was winning. I think it was round four or five. Kovalev hit him with some really good shots that would take people out, and he wasn't budged. And is Kovalev's punch resistance going, you can ask, because Alvarez isn't a known puncher. Five of his previous six fights have gone the distance prior to knocking out Kovalev. So, you know, there's a lot of questions to be answered tomorrow night. And for Kovalev, he cannot afford to lose, because it would end it as a, you know, his age, he's 30, was he 35? It's going to be 18 months getting back into contention.
But if he even wants to.
If he wants to. I mean, he's made some good money, particularly from the Ward matches. And he's got a new trainer tomorrow night, Buddy McGirt. Absolute fascinating fight, as is the whole card on Box Nation tomorrow night.
Just on the Kovalev side of it, you say he's with Buddy McGirt. There was always things before about how he lives outside of boxing. There was stuff about maybe he drinks more than he should. And maybe that this kind of lifestyle contributes to him being a bit weak to the body. Maybe he doesn't eat what he should. There was always these noises around Kovalev. And I remember Andre Ward in particular saying that he'd heard these noises and, you know, he knows what's going on over there. So now that he's with Buddy McGirt, has that got better? I'm hearing all sorts of allegations about what he's up to in his personal life. What is Kovalev heading into this fight?
Well, look, if you listen to Buddy McGirt and Kovalev, you know, McGirt has raised not the, you know, the drinking issues that come up in the past. McGirt has, you know, said he was warned about him, that he's a nightmare to train. That was the other thing, that he did what he wanted. You know, it was a case of, with Kovalev, the towel will be wagging the dog as such. But Buddy McGirt says he's done everything he's asked of. He's been easy to train, which he would do. So I suppose the answer is going to be in the pudding, how he performs tomorrow night in Frisco, Texas, on that bill.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big show too, isn't it? Oscar Valdez is on, Teofimo Lopez. Talk me through it.
Yeah, well, it's a monster night. It starts around 2:30, and we think we could be on air till as late as 7 a.m. in the morning. kicks off 2:30. I think the first fight in the ring will be Richard Comey against Isar Chaniev for the vacant IBF lightweight championship.
Lomachenko wants the winner, doesn't he?
Lomachenko is going to fight the winner, it seems. Yeah. They both had to sign an agreement to fight Loma, as did Beltran and Pedraza when they fought for the WBO.
He's ducking Crawler though, Steve. Telling you, if he does that, he's ducking Anthony Crawler. He's ducking his mandatory, right?
Look, that WBA man, the trio, you know, I'm a big fan of Anthony. He's a friend of mine. It's not a fight that excites me greatly from Anthony's point of view. And I don't like to say that because I do get on so well with Anthony. And, you know, you can't say a bad word against him. But it's not a fight that fills me with excitement, or one I'm particularly keen on for Anthony at this stage of his career. But, you know, I'm not there to advise Anthony. You know, he'll be getting well paid, and I'm sure he'll leave it all in the ring on the night if he gets his chance. But I think they've already penciled in April 12, I think, for Lomachenko to face Comey or Chaniev. April 12 might be a little bit too soon. Depends how the winner comes out tomorrow night. And if there's any justice, I suppose it should be Comey, given those two dubious split decision losses to Robert Easter when he challenged for this title, and Jenis Shafikov. Then that opens the card tomorrow night. And then we go on to Oscar Valdez against Carmine Tommasoni, the Italian. Valdez's first fight for 11 months. He's been recovering from a broken jaw. Look, there's little to suggest Tommasoni can win the fight, isn't there? He's 19-0. And after 11 months out and such a serious injury, I don't think you could dig Valdez up so much. Tommasoni, in fact, he's an interesting character. He was the first ever professional to compete at the Olympics. You know, they allowed some pros into Rio.
Yeah, like Endam and that.
Yeah, he was 15-0 when he fought in Rio, after AIBA decided professional boxers could compete. He went in and won them APB qualifiers, lost in the semi-final, and then won the third place against Yilmaz, a Turk, and got into the Olympics. But he lost to the Cuban Alvarez in his second fight. But there's today's boring stat of the day to you.
Then, no, that wasn't boring. That was a great bit of trivia. Well done, Steve.
We've got Teofimo Lopez against Diego Magdaleno. Is Lopez not just the greatest celebrator of a win in boxing when he does his fortnight dance? Is he the best prospect in boxing? Speak to anyone at top rank, and I speak to a lot of them there, people like Evan Korn, who help us on this podcast. We want their fighters. And they think he could top De La Hoya, Mayweather and Cotto, who are fighters they built. So we'll have to see. Diego Magdaleno, he's only lost a couple times, both in world title fights. Terry Flanagan, who wiped him out in two rounds. And the other loss was to Roman Rocky Martinez, for the WBO super featherweight title, when Martinez was full. So to be fighting Magdaleno in your 12th fight says something. And then after that, be about 6 o'clock in the morning by then, it'll be time for Alvarez and Kovalev.
Wow, okay. I'll just say on Teofimo Lopez, I'm well on board the hype train. I think he's great, and I think he is going to be a star. He looks great, he fights great, he throws punches with authority, punches with bad intentions, and he does all those little dances. He's my type of fighter, so I'm particularly hyped about seeing this one. And of course, Alvarez Kovalev has me very hyped. I might even stay up. I might even join you, Stephen, to what, 7, 8 in the morning, whenever it is.
You've got to text me to tell me you're watching. Now I'm going to catch you out.
And if
you don't, and you're watching it on record, there'll be words next week on this podcast. But again, Box Nation delivers. We've got a world title fight next weekend. And then February the 15th, there's some British interest. Thomas Ward, who we've had on the channel before, the former British champion, he makes his American debut in Kansas Friday, February the 15th. That's a new fight that we can announce. He's up against Jesse Angel Hernandez.
Wow. Old Thomas Patrick Ward.
25-0. He's getting the world rankings. I think they had hope for an IBF final eliminator for him, but they've not managed it. But great profile for him. When he makes his American debut in Kansas on a Showbox show.
So plenty coming up on Box Nation, and well, this Saturday I'll be watching. You know, I've told you now, I've committed to it, so I am going to have a terrible Monday because I'm going to be staying up all weekend watching Alvarez versus Kovalev. Can't wait. The British super featherweight champion and one of the hardest working men in boxing, Sam Bowen, had some bad news recently as his February 23rd opponent, Ronnie Clark, was forced to withdraw from their fight with injury. Promoter Frank Warren, we understand, is working on a replacement. Here's what Sam Bowen had to say.
Sam, Ronnie Clark's pull out to challenge for your British title. Disappointment, or did you just get on with life?
Yeah, like I said, we found out yesterday while we were doing some filming. It is a disappointment. I was excited for the fight. It was made for a good fight. He has pulled out. There's not much I can do about it. So now we'll just concentrate on whoever this next opponent is. Like I said, it's literally been 24 hours, so we don't know yet. No point in crying over spilt milk. And I'm excited for whoever this next... But like Warren said, it's going to be for one of my defences, WBO or British, so... As long as I'm in for a title fight, a big show, and I'm on it, I'm still main event. That's the main thing. It's still 4 or 5 weeks out. So,
are you finding it all now? Because until a few months ago, fighters like Liam Woodstock, Zelfa Barrett, Archie Shop were getting more attention than you've been. You just sort of... What does it feel like to you having leapt from obscurity, so to speak?
They're a little bit louder than me. They're a little bit more public on the social media side, and I suppose that's probably got them in where they've got them. I'm not like that. I'm a bit more reserved. I do all my talking in the ring. I've got such a busy lifestyle that I've got no time for social media. Like I say, I've been in the fights that need to get me where I've got to, and I like my last fight, WBO Intercontinental. I've won that, and that's put me in this position to box on a big show. I won the British as well in April. So I've got options now. I've got two belts. I can defend either one of them, and it's giving me options to be on these big shows. I'm thankful for Warren for signing me, because now all my fights are going to be on a big show. And this one on the 23rd of February is a big show in Leicester, live on BT.
Leon Woodstock's one of your rivals. I understand he was offered the fight and turned this fight down to fight you next month. What do you think of that decision?
Literally, it's for my last fight. I think people, you would have thought if you'd have listened to the interviews I'd had, you'd have thought it was Sam Bowen v Woodstock, because they weren't interested in who I was fighting. It was, what do you think of Woodstock? This Woodstock, that. I think, look, if that fight were to ever happen, it'd be a good scrap, but I think I'm too strong for him. I mean, he got bullied by Archie Sharp. What do you think I could do to him? I mean, he's been offered this fight. I mean, I know they said, well, I don't know what his reason is, but if they're saying they're working for a smaller round fight, well, that's just no excuse. We're 5 weeks out. I'm sure he's fit. I mean, I'm fit. Yeah, we've only just had Christmas. I ain't really that interested. He's been offered it, and they've turned it down. So what does that tell you? I mean, he ain't said anything, so he knows the score, don't he? But it's just, it was so boring in the past, and it's really boring now. Like I say, my aim's to get me ranking up in the world, not beat a Leicester fighter.
Did you think you passed that stage now where you feel where you'll fight guys like that?
I think he's had his chance to fight me. Yeah, don't get me wrong, it would be a big fight in Leicester, but that's all it is. It's not going to get me any more ranking. It's a big fight in Leicester, that's it. There's not much to say on it. I mean, he's been offered the fight. Carl mentioned in the past on the last conference call when I boxed that other kid, like, you don't want to fight Sam, and he passes it off with an answer, almost as if he's my best mate, saying, oh, we'll wait till the time's right. At the end of the day, there's no right time. He got beat, you know what I mean? I know they was giving it the big and thinking they're going to be Archie Sharp, and Archie Sharp was a bit like me, a bit more reserved. And like I say, you don't need to be loud, you don't need to put stuff on the internet. I mean, I don't bother waiting, I'll do all right, so...
What do you think of the world champion, especially, you know, Gervonta Davis, who seems to be the one spoken about more ahead of Tevin Farmer and the rest?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Gervonta Davis. He's mega, like I say, he's unreal. The world champions are world champions for reasons. I mean, I haven't seen much of the world champion in the WBO. I think it is very beatable. Like I say, that's the division I'm in at the moment, got WBO Intercontinental, so we could be setting our sights on someone like him. But no, like the likes of Gervonta Davis, and even like, I know Lemonchenko's moved up, but they're obviously out and out class, and they're enjoyable. You enjoy watching them because they're just putting on a good show, and they just destroy the fight. You know, but like I say, that's what I'm working my sights up to. I mean, I'd love to get to that sort of level and on them sort of shows and like big shows in America and stuff. It'd be amazing. Like I say, that's the dream, isn't it? Really. So.
You're a big super featherweight. Could you fight someone like Lomachenko one day?
I don't know, if it got offered, you'd have to think about it, wouldn't you? But no, no, there's no two ways about it. He's class, and the way he hits people without getting it is just unreal. So, like I say, I can only feel sorry for his opponents. So.
No, they might offer an absolute fortune.
What, to fight me?
No, he might offer you a fortune to fight him.
I don't know. Like I say, I'll take it, I think.
Of course you would. You're a fighting man. Just tell us the situation with your job at the moment, because it must be getting harder, especially as you're moving into world level and talking about these guys like Davis, Farmer.
Yeah, like I say, I mean, without boring you, we know my daily routine's extremely long, but like, so me and the missus have agreed, after this fight, I've got like a newborn, not a newborn, he's 8 months old now, but I need to be home a little bit more. So like I say, after this fight, something's got to change. I can't be working full-time, training full-time, boxing world-class fighters, fitting in the family, fitting in my little one. Like I say, I'm not a machine. I know I come across it, but like I say, I'm only human, and something's got to change after this fight. Like I say, I booked. Now I've got the little one, I use him to my advantage with work because he got parental leave. So I've put 4 weeks parental leave in for this fight, 4 weeks holiday. So I am due to go back work on the 25th of Feb. But then, like I said, I've got no holiday for the rest of the year. So imagine I get a phone call where I'm saying, oh, April, May time, I've got you a big fight. I said, well, what am I going to do? You know what I mean? I've got work. So, like I said, it is important to win this next fight. I speak to my sponsor, who's Baz Jordan, Jordan Rose Service, and he's looked after me from day one, and we're in talks of sorting some out after this fight. So fingers crossed I'll get the win.
Well, the show will go on February 23rd at the Leicester Arena. Sam Bowen, I'm sure, will have an opponent soon. Anthony Yard will take on Mehdi Ammar. Unbeaten Midlands boys CJ Challenger and Kyle Hayward go at it for the Midlands area 154-pound title. Nathan Gorman's back. Tommy Fury's back. There's lots going on. So if you're in the area, go and check it out. If you're not, then just watch it on BT. Enjoy. Now, Steve, at the end of last week's podcast, I set you two tasks. I said to you, bring me Carl Frampton and bring me O'Hara Davis. What have you got for me?
One out of two.
Okay.
I'll give you the baddish news first. I couldn't get Carl on the line this week. Really sorry, Dev. I mean, I know I'm in trouble with you, but I'm sorry for that. Okay. He's promised me he will do it in a couple of weeks' time. You know, he's got a few things on. He's promised us. So we'll have plenty to talk about in a couple of weeks' time. And he will be on the podcast. I did deliver O'Hara Davis,
yes,
who had a lot to say.
OD. Well, let's hear it. Let's roll into a bit of OD.
Well, O'Hara, 2018 was a bit of a mixed year for you. How would you sum it up?
I think my 2018, people might say it was a mixed year, but in my opinion, it was I feel like it was a good year. After getting thrown under the bus at the start of that year, I was in a really bad place, and then after getting signed, like by Frank, that put me in a really good place. So I'm now fighting again, I'm fighting for belts, and I feel like I've got myself in a decent place. So in my opinion, with how I started my year and how it ended, I feel like I ended it in a much better place. So I would like to thank MTK, and I'd like to thank Frank Rowan for that.
Yeah, the reason I said that, because you had that great knockout against Paul Kamanga. It was probably knockout of the year in a British ring. And then and then you lost to Cattrall, and that was the fight that maybe would have put you, he's now number one in the world with a WBO. That's why I asked about, the mixed year.
That fight would have put me in the, in the number one, in a WBO, but I do feel a bit disheartened, because I feel like I won that fight, and I feel like it got taken away from me. I did get robbed, but I feel like I allowed them to rob me. And, I should have put more work in, I should have threw more shots, and I could have done more work to get, to get the win. But I felt comfortable in there, so I didn't feel like I needed to do any more work, because I felt like I was up on points quite comfortably. But it seemed like, I felt like the whole house, it was against me that night. With how all the scorecards were, one judge gave it 118 to 110, which means that I only got two rounds of that 12 round fight. I literally sat down and I watched it back, and I was thinking, how can I only get two rounds of that fight? It's not fair. Something's obviously gone wrong. And now I just have to go into every fight with that same mindset as, it's me against the whole house. Everyone's against me. Every judge was against me. The fans are all against me. And I feel like if I have that mindset.
Why do you think judges would be against you?
Judges might be against me because of the way that I've acted in the past. I'm quite controversial. Things that I've said in the past in the media and the press, in interviews, I've said a few disrespectful things. And, some people don't like it, some fans don't like the way that I've said things, and some boxing judges might feel that same way. So once it comes to fight night, I'm really going to be 6 rounds down going into the fight. But I've never really thought about that until the last time that I had.
But, you know, what about the comments you made last night, though, that have angered some people? Do you think that brings more people against you?
The comments I made last night, I don't think that angered anyone, Steve.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying people, I'm reading some of the comments, and some people are agreeing with you. It hasn't caused the outcry of previous things.
I feel like I've got 95% of people agreeing with me. And if you look at all the comments, you know, I've got put in the Birmingham Live this morning. I got put in a different paper last night. And I'm seeing all these different articles claiming that I've made some type of, some type of idiotic tweet that's angered this whole world, you know, and that's caused a total outrage. But just through looking at, just by looking through, like, the comments that everyone's been saying, it seems like I've got more, like I've got a lot more people on my side than I do against me.
That's fair enough, then, but as you say, what I will say, it's a tweet that, you know, it was obviously something you thought about and think, you know, in the past you said you just tweeted things. That's obviously something you thought about and believed.
Yeah. And I've got everyone on my side. I've got 95% on my side. I've got like a 95% people saying that I've said something right and good. And they actually agree with the things that I've said. It's true. I don't think that there's anything wrong with what I've said. I feel like people want me to be some kind of puppet that doesn't speak his mind. The person that I am, I'm always gonna say how I feel, and I'm always gonna be honest with with things that I think, and that's not what the media wants, and that's not what the press wants. They want me to be a dummy boxer that just goes there every day, trains, who only talks about boxing and doesn't talk about anything else. But I'm not just a boxer. I'm a person, I'm a human being, I've got thoughts, and I've got all these different opinions, and I'm not going to hide it just because I'm a pro boxer.
So when is it you're going to be boxing again, O'Hara?
I'll be ready to fight mid-April, early May. I'll be ready to fight again. I am back in the gym now. I've been training like every day. I'm not in camp, but I am back in the gym, so I've got to learn up, I've got to brush up, I've got to do some weight.
Are you going to stay at super lightweight? Because as I say, you used to make your weight, you're a big man.
To be honest, I make 10 stone easily.
Wow.
People feel like I make it hard. I make 9 stone 9 hard. That's the way I struggle to make. That's why I have to go up. But I literally walk around maybe 10-8, 10-7, 10-8, 10-9. So I don't really have to lose that much weight. I've only got to lose, a few pounds. I can make 10 stone for a couple of years, I believe.
Well, and where are you training now?
I'm at 2 gyms. I'm at the Essex Fight Academy, and I train at the West Ham gym as well. I'm just literally back and forth at both gyms.
You know, even though, people still seem to be enjoying calling you out. And I noticed Sam Maxwell said a few things about you wanting to box you this year. Is that a fight that appeals to you?
I've been called out by a few people this year. But I don't blame them. You know, even though I got boxed in my last fight, I'm still the big name. So it's not on their terms. I'm not just going to be like, oh, I've been called out by this guy, so I want to fight him. I'm literally not responding to these guys because these guys are not on my level. When you speak about these guys' name and if you mention their name, these guys are not known on the national stage, but if you speak about my name, I'm known on a world stage, and it's two complete different things. It's like me going out there and calling out some guy that might not be, it's like me going out there and calling out some guy that's so known and so far past me. I won't even be expecting a response from him. But these guys that have been out there calling me out, these guys, like they haven't won anything, like they haven't won any belts. As an amateur, these guys, it's like they might have done things, but in the pros, these guys haven't won anything. So I feel like before anyone goes out there and starts to call, and starts to go and to call me out, they have to at least win things, at least win something, at least have a name, at least be known on the national stage before you go and call out someone who is known on a world stage. It's two complete different levels. I want big fights. I'm not trying to fight someone that doesn't have a name, but I might be a good boxer. That's a complete waste of time. I'm into big, exciting, entertaining fights.
So what's your message to Sam Maxwell, who seems a bit more vociferous than any of them? Because he's usually a quiet fella.
He's
from Liverpool as well, so...
My message would be, keep on fighting, keep on winning, keep on improving. And maybe after you win a few titles, then I might consider giving him a response. But as of now, I've got nothing to say to him. I'm looking past him. I'm looking at even bigger names. So he needs to, you know, he's one of the people. Tyron McKenna's another one. I put them both in the same text bracket. I feel like him and Tyron McKenna, they should probably fight. You know, they should probably fight each other. I'm looking past him. I'm looking at people on the world stage. I'm looking at people like Joe Hughes, Davis Jr. because they're fighting for the British and the EU belt. I'm looking at big names like that. I'm not just going to be called. I'm not just going to be pulled into any fight with some guy that doesn't have a name because he wants to fight Howard Davis. Big, you know, like big round. I would like to fight Freddie and go make up, you know, 30, 40 million, but that's not how it works. I can't just go out and call out Floyd. Floyd's on a complete different, you know, he's, you know, Floyd's on a complete different plane. There's all about being smart in this game, and it's the, you know, it's the equivalent to, like, to, let's say, big, you know, big Baby Miller trying to call out AJ. AJ's on a complete different level to this guy. And he, you know, it's like AJ's on a complete different, you know, AJ's on a complete different plane. That big baby, he's known on a national stage, AJ's known on a world stage. Like, just don't go and call out this guy before you've won something, before you're known on the world stage. It's not about just being like a good boxer. It's like you have to market yourself right, become a name, and if the money's there and the title's there and the belts are there, then the fight can happen.
And obviously another fight I'm sure you'd like down the line is the rematch with Jack Catchell. Especially, you said you know what went wrong, and you just needed maybe that extra 10%.
The rematch is not something that I'll be looking at, really, because I know how that fight went. I know that I performed good and I'm pleased with how I fought. I feel like I fought a good fight, so the rematch is not something that I'm really interested in because I've got nothing to prove. You know, the only thing I have to prove, I have to prove it to myself and to my coaches and to the people around me, and everyone knows how that fight should have gone. So, you know, I know that I won the fight, but the scorecard was against me, and the judges, they put their own agenda against me. So I've got nothing to prove. So the rematch is not something that I'm looking at. But, you know, but with Jack, I wish him all the best, and hopefully he'll be on the world stage now, and he'll be fighting for the world, because he's been ranked quite high in the WBO for some time now.
And before we let you go, could you just give a message to the fans that love you and the fans that might not love you so much?
To the fans that love me, I want to give them thanks. You know, keep on loving me. I'm real. The fans that love me are fans that love people that are real, people that speak their mind, people that are not afraid to be individuals, people that are not afraid to have their thoughts and to express their own thoughts, because, you know, that's what I do. I express my own thoughts. You know, I'm not afraid to offend anyone. And so fans that love me, I want to give them thanks for loving me, because I'm real. To the people that hate me, I don't think I've got anything to say to them. You know, just keep on hating me, keep on writing bad things about me, because, you know what they say, all publicity is all good publicity. So I'm getting publicity from those that love me and from those that hate me. So I just want to encourage those that hate me to keep on hating me, and those that love me to keep on loving me, because, you know, with them both, they both help me become the person that I am.
Steve, whenever he opens his mouth and talks, people have an opinion. Whenever he gets his thumbs going and starts tweeting, people have an opinion. That is a Horace Davis, right?
He can't help himself, does he? If he's got something to say, he says it, and he is Marmite. I mean, it's become a cliche. I think, was it James DeGaul was the first original Marmite boxer who called himself Marmite, and boxers and sportsmen seem to have picked up on that, that they're Marmite. And he is Marmite, without a doubt. And you know what? You only speak as you find with people. And, you know, I find O'Hara, he's a model professional to deal with when you're in the media. Take that little call we did the other day when we recorded the interview for the pod. I rang him the day before. He said, yeah, 11 o'clock the next morning, 5 to 11 that morning. He texted me saying, can I do it a bit quicker? Because he had to go at 11:15 to an appointment. You know, so when you get athletes like that who are willing to give their time, who want to give their time and make yourself available, you have time for them. And he had plenty to say there. You know, he's got this feeling that boxing's people in boxing, particularly your officials, are against him. I don't necessarily agree with that. And I think he gets that from, obviously, the persona there is that he's got that in his mind. But also, he generally believes that he was jobbed in the Jack Catchell fight. That I can't see at all. I thought Jack, you know, there were close rounds, but there was only one winner on that particular night. And that was Jack Catchell.
Yeah. I mean, that fight there wasn't really a lot going on at all.
It was literally great hype, shame about the fight.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of them. Jack Catchell's going to go on. He's going to challenge for a world title, and I'm sure he's going to win one. He's an absolute talent himself. What we're saying about Ahara Davis there, like you, I take him as I find them, and I've always thought he's been all right. Ever since I met him, he's been nice to me. And he's just a little one. He commented on my Instagram picture of me and my mum and my wife, and he just put, "Beautiful wife and mums, bro. Good picture." This is the sort of guy he is. He's a nice bloke.
Yeah, yeah, look, I have this discussion with boxers about him, and obviously Sam Maxwell is desperate to get to grips with him. And he's up. I was in Liverpool doing some work for you, some filming for Frank Warren's website a couple of weeks ago, Dev. Mm. And Sam was saying, he wants to fight him. That's the fight I want. And he was saying, do you know him, Steve, at all? And I said, look, he's one of those guys that if you meet him, you shake your head and give your own head a rattle when you see some of the stuff he's come out with. Mm-hmm. But you meet him, you don't have that. He's the last guy you think behaves like that sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's just it. But on Sam Maxwell, well, there you go, Sam. You've got some clear instructions at the end of that interview on how you can land a fight with Ahara Davis. Sam, I'm sure you're listening. Let us know what you think. Well, it's that time of the week again. Every week, people stop me on the street and they ask, what's that Steve Lillis going to rant and rave about on this week's show? What's he got on his mind? Steve, I can't walk a minute without someone asking me. So now I'm asking you, what you talking about, Lillis?
Ah, those people, Dev, they're going to expect a rant this week and they're not going to get it. They're going to get love this week from Lillis. Love from Lillis this week. Okay. And you know what? It's got to go to George Groves, who announced his retirement bang at the right times. He's only, 30 years of age? I think he's 31 the end of March, and he's bowing out after that. So he said it was a heavy loss to Callum Smith in the World Boxing Super Series final, and he bowed out bang at the right time. He's given us so many moments going back to his amateur days. You know, when he fought his clubmate then, James DeGow, in the ABA, I think it was in an ABA championship. I think it was in 2006 they fought, and the rivalry had been there before them, and he beat DeGow in that. You know, and that was a big amateur win then. You know, he went professional, and he wasn't given, you know, after eight fights, he was fighting like Charles Adamo, who's still going strong. He isn't going strong, but he's still going. When Adamo was
recently, yeah.
Yeah, when Adamo was a real threat. Adamo was a tough super middleweight. You know, he beat him. A couple fights later, he had a war with Kenny Anderson. James DeGow in that rematch that Frank Warren pointed, the 0-2, winning that rematch. And you've never known such a bitter rivalry as that, and it still goes on to this day. They're two boxers who, if they were ever in the same room again, they will not talk. You know, that was a great win. He then went and knocked out Paul Smith in two rounds. And then, of course, you go on to the two Frotch fights. The first fight controversially stopped. The second fight, he was well beaten. And that was back in 2014. You thought he wouldn't win a world title. He then lost to Badu Jack in a world title in Las Vegas. He was outraged by that decision. I thought Badu Jack, I was there that night for Box Nation. I thought Badu Jack won the fight. But, you know, you thought, would he ever win a world title? And then he finally did in 2017 against Fedor Chudinov. You know, he dug deep that night to win in six rounds. And then he went in a super series, made himself, you know, I hear all sorts of figures, maybe as much as, you know, £6-7 million in the super series, beat Jamie Cox. And then who can forget the win up against Chris Eubank, which, yes, you know, won him a place in a lot of people's hearts before the Callum Smith fight, but where he still went out on his shield. He's had a fantastic career, and what a servant he's been to British boxing. But also, can you know, talk about him away from boxing, you know, always good to deal with. I remember before he fought Badu Jack, you know, 3 days before that, he went and let Box Nation do a half-hour special with him in his hotel suite. Fantastic fella. And I remember when he used to come in the Box Nation studio, and boxers, when they come into that studio, as you know, Dev, they come mop-handed. They have a little green room, and you can't even sit down in there. You know, say, bring mates. Yeah. George would always turn up by himself. And I never forget when Frank Warren won the purse bids for a rematch with Kenny Anderson. And they both had to come into the Bunce boxing hour that night. I was in the studio and they both were in separate rooms with their own security because the ill feeling was that bad. But a pleasure to deal with and a pleasure to be around in his career. He might not go down as, you know, one of the great super middleweights of all times. But when it comes to exciting careers and fighting high-end fighters, there's few British boxers that can match it. And you can only thank him for everything he's done. And I'm certain George isn't one of those boxers that will ever return as a fighter. I hope he can offer something back. He's very, very bright. And I think he's got a good future as a manager because he knows the business workings of this industry.
I'd quite like to see him as a pundit because he does speak very, very well and he's young and he can kind of connect with the audience. So I think he's got a job there. But as you say, manager as well, you know, does he manage anyone at the moment?
He's got his manager's license because he's been managing himself for a few years. Yeah, and I think there was what you put it on me, there was a fighter he was managing or he might still be managing. And the name escapes me. He was helping out and it's just gone from me, the name. Someone might, you know, when they hear the podcast, please tweet me and let me know.
Yeah, let us know. Well, personally, I love how in the build-up to the first Froch fight, he really got under Carl Froch's skin and he was doing things with Rubik's Cubes and all sorts of stuff like that. And there was that famous incident on ringside over on Sky where Froch was just kind of like he was just raging but trying to hold it in and control it. And George Groves really, really did well in the build-up today. It made me laugh a lot.
That's a great point. And even to this week, I'm a big fan.
To this day,
it's still there. You only have a look at Carl's Twitter feed this week. Oh, he's had a sly dig at him. I know it's Andre Ward pulled him up for. But the bad feeling, if you ever see Carl Froch's after dinner speech, and I don't know if he's changed the script in the last year or so, he ends his script about knocking out George Groves.
Well, he
doesn't mention 80,000 people in it. He's a little bit harsher on Groves than that.
Oh, goodness me. Okay, well, but back to George Groves. We wish you well. Everyone at the Boxing Podcast wishes you well. You've had a great career and good luck in doing whatever you're going to do next. I'm sure we'll be seeing you again. Well, Steve, another week, another great show. Give me a final word on Alvarez versus Kovalev. What's your prediction? Give it to me.
I've got to go for Alvarez to repeat his win last August to prove that, you know, there was no fluke about it. I think it'll be a similar sort of fight, be close, but I see Kovalev maybe gassing a little bit later than last time. I'll go for Alvarez around round 10.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Steve. I see Kovalev gassing in the second half of the fight and Alvarez just waiting, biding his time and then taking apart a tired man later. But I want Kovalev to win because I want Kovalev in the UK. I want Kovalev versus Yard. That's what I want. That's what my dream is. That's what I'm talking about. How about it, Steve?
Yeah, look, that would be a dream fight. What a massive fight that would be for British boxing. Sergei Kovalev, the Russian monster, defending against Anthony Yard, who's one of British boxing's great hopes for the future. But look, I just want to see Anthony Yard fight for a world title and to be lining up against the winner of tomorrow night's fight or whoever is WBO champion by the end of this year.
Sounds good to me. Well, remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sonny Dev, and at The Boxing Pod, and leave us a review on iTunes. Tell you what, give us 5 stars, or if Steve Lillis sees you on the roads, you'll be seeing stars. Is that right, Steve?
Oh, I've just gone and praised Jules Groves. There's been no rant. I'm a man of love. But give us 5 stars!
Well said. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.